We could see from the bulletin that the title of my sermon is What Paul Didn't Know About Church Conflict. But I do have to give Paul a break and say one thing in his defense. And that is that he was really exploring totally uncharted territory. I mean, Paul was the very first person in the world to do what he did, which was he was the first Christian missionary on that big a scale. Paul was traveling all through Asia Minor, which is modern-day Turkey, and all through Greece, visiting towns and villages and cities and preaching to crowds of people he came across. Because he was a persuasive speaker and because he spoke passionately and because he was a charismatic individual, large numbers of people responded to what he said. They held on to the hope that he offered them. They responded with faith. And then Paul would take these people and he would try to organize them into communities, the beginnings of the first churches in the Gentile world. And he would put somebody in charge, and then Paul would go on to the next town or the next village and start the process all over again. But you can imagine what happened. Because just like we are, the people in those communities were human beings, and they were different. They were diverse. They had different thoughts, opinions, politics, values, personalities. Everything about them was different. And as they started trying to live together in a new Christian community, those differences surfaced, as inevitably they will, and sometimes they expressed themselves in some not-so-pretty ways. And so those churches would write to Paul and ask him for advice. And Paul would respond to them and with letters, and these letters were collected over the years because of the theological insight that they offered. And a large portion of the New Testament consists of some of these collected letters that Paul wrote. One of the letters that he wrote, as you know, was to a church in a place called Corinth. Let me tell you a little bit about the city of Corinth. It was an exciting, vibrant city located on a crossroad to the Roman Empire. For one thing, if you can imagine the map of Greece, this is what you go around thinking about all week, right? But if you can imagine the map of Greece, Greece has a northern portion and a southern portion, and the northern portion is connected to the mainland of Europe. And then it comes down to this small land bridge that then leads to this large isthmus that is the southern portion of Greece. And on this land bridge was the city of Corinth. So that if you were traveling from the south to the north or from the north to the south, you had to travel through Corinth. And there was also a harbor there, an important harbor that was the center of commerce from all over the Mediterranean Sea. And so it became a very cosmopolitan, busy, vibrant city. But like all busy, vibrant, exciting cities like San Francisco, Corinth was a place of incredible diversity. And that diversity began to express itself in the life of that community. For one thing, there were people of all different socioeconomic backgrounds. There were wealthy people, and there were merchants and artisans who were more middle class, and there were slaves, all living in the same community. And there were people with a lot of education who had studied philosophy and rhetoric, and there were people with no education who were quite simple in their intellectual abilities, at least as far as they had been developed. There were people with all different ideas on how to be religious. For instance, their diet. Now, today, there are people who, for religious reasons, avoid certain kinds of food, who are vegans, who are vegetarians. And in that church, there were also people who tried to keep kosher, some people who decided that they couldn't eat meat that had been sacrificed to idols and sold at cut rate in the marketplace, and other people who felt perfectly free to eat anything they wanted to. And in terms of the worship style that they liked, there were some people who wanted to have a really enthusiastic, charismatic worship style, and other people who wanted a style of worship that spoke to their minds and their intellects. And there was also diversity in the sexual behavior of that congregation. And all of these things surfaced and created problems and conflict in that church. And so the members of the church in Corinth wrote to Paul and asked for his advice. And Paul wrote back to them and basically gave them his position on each of these issues, and he prefaced it by saying what you heard in the scripture we read today. He said, "By the authority of our Savior Jesus Christ, I appeal to you to agree in what you say. Be completely united in thought and in purpose." Well, how do you think that turned out? I mean, if you and a friend were disagreeing about something, and he went to a third friend and said, "How can we solve this problem?" And that third friend took one of your sides and said, "Just agree." Would you be likely to agree? I don't think so. And if you read 2 Corinthians, you'll find out that the problems only got worse, because Paul really didn't know much about handling conflict in the local church. Again, I said to his defense, he was the first to try this. It wasn't as though others had gone before him and made mistakes and he had a chance to learn from them and try something out. And he certainly didn't have the advantages of having gone through a Harvard MBA and learned how to manage complex organizations. How do we deal with conflict in communities, in churches, in societies, in the world? I want to tell you a story about what was probably the most important, but in some ways the most painful thing that ever happened to me in my pastorate. Happened about 20 years ago in Eatontown, New Jersey. And out of curiosity, I went on the web this morning and checked the weather in Eatontown, New Jersey. And they're having a high of 20 degrees today with 25 mile an hour winds out of the north and up to 12 inches of snow on the ground. So I'm happy to be in California. But I had a small to medium-sized church in Eatontown, New Jersey. And we had a building that was about 20 years old. I hadn't been there 20 years, obviously. But they had an all-purpose room that they worshiped in and that they had their meals in. And they had a Sunday school wing and they had a nice kitchen. And for years and years, they had had the dream of finishing that building and putting a formal sanctuary at the other side. And they'd been saving for it, so they had a substantial building fund, but they didn't have the strength of numbers to be able to complete this dream of theirs. One day, I got a phone call from the district superintendent who wanted me and the church to consider an idea that he wanted to present to us. And that idea involved another local United Methodist Church, a Korean congregation, that was worshiping at a church 4 miles up the road, worshiping in the chapel of that large church. But they had outgrown that chapel. And they were a small to medium-sized church as well, with a lot of financial strength, but no land. And they had the ability to go out and maybe build a building, but they didn't think that was good stewardship, because all of their children spoke English, and they knew that in a generation there wouldn't be a need for a Korean-only congregation. And so our district superintendent knew about the needs of both congregations, and he suggested that we try to get together. And he asked me if I would bring up the idea to our congregation, if there was some way for us to be together in ministry and build the building that we both wanted to be a part of. And so I agreed to bring up the subject. There were two very different kinds of responses to that idea. Some of the people in the congregation were really excited about the proposal. They saw it as a win-win solution, and they saw it as a chance to embody what the church is supposed to represent, the idea that beyond the ethnic differences that we have, we are really one humanity and one family. And so some of the people, the congregation, were really for this idea. But there are other people in the congregation some of the older people, but not all of them, who were really afraid of this idea and afraid of what might happen, afraid of what the different ethnic backgrounds might mean later on in the life of the church. But we had a decision to make, and I tried my best to mediate that decision. One of the things I didn't know in those days, however, was that you cannot take a side and then try to mediate a decision. And I was for the idea of joining with this Korean congregation and seeing what we could do. Well, it was a very unpleasant kind of decision-making process, but the church decided to go ahead and join forces and work together. And we did. And we built a beautiful new sanctuary, and we joined together as congregations. We had separate worship services, but we had one Sunday school. It was a wonderful Sunday school, the best part of the experiment. Lots of kids, lots of teachers. It was really wonderful. And one youth group. And I remember one day standing in the hallway, and I saw a sight that brought the biggest smile to my face and the biggest smile to my heart. I saw three members of that youth group walking down the hallway of the church. Three young women. One of them was Anglo, and one of them was African American, and one of them was Korean. And it, you know, where in our society do we see this actually happening, except in the pages of Sunday school curricula? But it was really happening in our church, and it made me feel so good. And that's a memory, that's a sight I will treasure for the rest of my life. But as time went on, the irony is that some of the fears that some of the other members of the congregation had expressed began to realize themselves. And it made for some very difficult and some very painful times. And the thing I learned from that experience is that if I have a point of view that I feel very passionately about and somebody else disagrees with me, it doesn't mean that my point of view is wrong, but it may mean that that other person has a point of view that represents their truth, that has something I can learn from, and that the goal in the church is not for one side to win out over the other side, but for us to learn to respect one another. We don't need to agree with somebody to respect the idea that their truth represents their integrity. And if we can respect them, that allows them to respect us, and it builds a community, a diverse community, that is a lot stronger than if we only gather with people we agree with. Now, Jesus didn't say, go out and convert the people who you disagree with. Didn't say, go out and change your enemies. Jesus said, go and love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Jesus calls us to be peacemakers. Jesus calls us to manage conflict in such a way that we can respect one another even though we disagree. And certainly we need to know how to do that as a congregation, as a denomination, as a country, and as a world. What Paul didn't know about church conflict. I mean, he experienced a lot of it. But he didn't have the chance to sit back and reflect on it 20 years later and then tell us about it. I urge you to take upon yourself the call of Jesus to be peacemakers. And as hard as it can be sometimes, to not argue against somebody who disagrees with you, but listen to that person, not necessarily so that they can change your mind, but just so that you can hear where they are coming from and respect who they are, and that you can experience love even though you differ. That's the ideal that Jesus taught us. That's the ideal that I pray we as a congregation, as a denomination, and as a country can begin to learn to accomplish. Like Randy reminded us, peace of Christ is God's gift to us. May the peace of Christ be with you.